Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Nerd Stravaganza podcast, where professionals come to game. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we'll be discussing our plan to better your gaming experience through the deployment of our elite core of specially trained Nerd Stravaganza gaming pros. But before we get into tonight's main topic, let's discuss what we three pros have been up to since last we spoke with our usual Geekly Weekly Weekly Geekly roundup. Brian, hit it.
Borderlands 2 Bunkers and Badasses? That's amazing. I love it. I'm really enjoying it. And I think it's actually timely. Didn't it just come out?
Yes. Well, fairly recently, yep.
And an indie craft fair in Fort Lauderdale. That was fun. I saw a lot of Star Wars-themed stuff. And they had a cool Jawa pillow that I almost bought, but then it started raining and I forgot about it. And lastly, I'm a little shocked by this. I was interested in a Kickstarter called Schoolgirls Love Tentacles.
Okay.
Any chance you guys heard about that? Just me?
No, not that I would admit to.
And then it got yanked for the insinuation that something between a schoolgirl and a tentacle might happen. I'm very disappointed in that.
Might involve yanking?
Apparently, they thought it would involve yanking. So, that is now on Indiegogo. I have to back it there.
So Kickstarter, like, has a moral compunction against tentacle assault of fictional schoolgirls, but Indiegogo will let it fly?
It's very, very tame. It is tongue-in-cheek about how the relationship has been misunderstood all this time, and that they're actually, like, you know, cute little, like, pet monsters. But no, you cannot apparently say schoolgirl and tentacle without people thinking it's X-rated.
Okay, I'll take a link to that post show so I can express my outrage later, you know, after the show. Interesting week for you, sir. Anything else?
Yeah, that's it.
Cool. How about you, Ricky?
Absolutely nothing. Arduino and Animal Crossing. That's it.
That's a full week. That's not absolutely nothing. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
I have been playing Animal Crossing. I have been playing the Borderlands 2 expansion Brian mentioned. It's the best one to date. Can't say enough about that in the positive. And I have been continuing my reading of When Gravity Fails. I'm approaching the halfway mark of that book, and it's really starting to get interesting. So continues to get my endorsement. I haven't run into anything objectionable yet.
It's got trannies. How can it be objectionable?
Exactly. It's got future Islamic, I think. They haven't been to space yet, but future trannies, I guess. Wait, trannies is politically incorrect. Transgendered persons is, I think, what we're supposed to say. Regardless of what we're supposed to say, though, I've also been playing Mass Effect, and I did go to a future strip club there. I couldn't tell you if the people there were born with their gender or not, but they were pretty hot. So, nice. Yeah, Mass Effect 2, rounding out my gaming. With that said, I think it is time to move into tonight's topic. Speaking of gaming, but perhaps leaning more toward tabletop and RPG gaming, though we could possibly come up with a way to work video gaming in as well, we decided tonight to discuss pros, as we call them. These are special Nerd Stravaganza trained professionals whose training regimen I suppose will develop tonight as we're pulling all this out of our butt.
Live on air.
You heard it here first. These are people who have the dream job of playing games for a living, and you think, wow, that's a dream job, and it is, but it's for a purpose. It's not just because we want to pay somebody to do what they like. It's so that these people can get paid and can be on staff in stores all around the nation of the United States and the entire planet Earth, and can enhance the gaming experiences of players by basically being an in-house expert or facilitator. Or a PRO, which is an acronym that we cleverly thought up. PRO, player, referee, organizer. Simple, smaller, different. Wait, no, is that the Xbox One slogan? I can't seem to get it right.
It's close to that.
So, PRO, you know, obviously a player. And a referee, meaning, you know, there's somebody who knows the rules and can guide you through the game. Not somebody that's going to blow a whistle and throw penalty flags necessarily. And an organizer, meaning they facilitate play. They bring together the play. They know how to basically get you into the game with minimal effort, so that the sometimes intimidating tomes you have to read to understand the rules can be fed to you, can be spoon fed to you.
And then that also gives you somebody who is working kind of like, what's the name of that company? The Privateer Press. They had like their press gangers.
Yes.
Which were guys that would go out to the different stores and do an event. But, you know, then you've got one or two people kind of leading this one night demo thing, and you still kind of get lost in the crowd. So we're kind of pointing at or hinting at that type of person who's a professional at all the games that this place sells. A professional demoer is probably a nice, good, short way to describe it, right?
That's definitely a way to describe a pretty key facet of the job, yeah. Being able to, if somebody wants time with a game, hey, I want to know how to play this, they could sit down and teach you. And maybe also they organize the, you know, the play sessions that go on at night.
Yeah, but rather than be from a specific company and only having a vast knowledge of that company's games, this is somebody who is a figurehead, so to speak, of the store, the particular store you're in.
Yeah, they're kind of the brand ambassador for your
yes,
store.
Yes, brand yeah. ambassador. I like that. That'll have to be the title for him.
Now, Brian, you've had probably, of all of us, the most time dealing both in video and tabletop and RPG gaming retail. Would you say that it could be worth it, given a store with enough cash flow and, you know, maybe hand-waving away some of the economic realities, or maybe not, depending on how you want to approach it, could you see a role for a person like that, that this could be someone's actual job at a game store?
I'm probably overthinking this. I think it could be. I think most retail locations are large enough for two employees on a week evening schedule or a week night. And I think one person can probably run the store just because of the volume I've seen. And that leaves the other person to do the brand ambassador and keep an eye on the place. You know, you need a presence there for loss prevention and things like that. And, you know, someone's got to clean up after closing. But I think you can squeeze that in. I think the second body is pretty feasible.
And do you think that it would add a lot, assuming that this person wasn't some kind of an insufferable know-it-all or like power gamer or something, do you think could you see how that, does it seem obvious to you that might enhance the customer experience in the store?
I think that would be the only trick, finding someone who actually likes people.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who likes his singular hobby.
Right, and wants to show off to everybody who comes in how awesome he is at it. Or she. Could be a she. I'm thinking of a very egotistical male for some reason that has a bad example of what we want. So.
Yeah, but if you instantly thought she, then you'd be a sexist. So you'd be like, oh yeah,
right.
Let's put the hot geek girl in there for all the fat retards to ogle over. So no matter what you do, you can't win on that. So
that's true. You'd have to alternate between kind of a very stereotypical-looking male gamer and a passably attractive female, I think. Because, yeah, let's face it, we really just want to use sex to sell games here, right? And that's all women are, is accessories to sell things, right? Right? No. That's not what we're saying. So National Federation of Angry Feminists, please do not assault us. We do not mean it that way.
We meant no harm.
Yeah, no harm meant. No harm meant. And no foul committed. A lot of the time I walk into stores, gaming stores, and, you know, I'm free to browse, but, and occasionally somebody will come up and be like, hey, do you have any questions? But for the most part, that's sort of just a formality. And I don't get the sense that if I picked a random game off the shelf, hey, what do you know about this? That I would get a satisfactory answer. I would probably get something like, Ed's going to be in later. And I think he played that once or twice. You can ask him.
Right, either that or, yeah, well, we have a group of guys who come in the third Sunday of every month that ends with an L, and they could probably teach you how to play.
Right.
But what's weird is when you're at these places normally, you know, they seem to screen their comic guys a hell of a lot more than they do the game guys. Because you're pretty much, have you ever been to a comic book place that the people that work there, for the most part, weren't kind of an expert, even if it was just an expert of the line of comics that they were into? You know what I mean?
No, yeah. There's always an expectation of a certain depth of knowledge in a few areas, if not a complete industry-wide breadth of knowledge. And
right. Expert might have been too strong of a word, Yeah. But you're going to have somebody who is going to know some history. They're going to be able to recommend a storyline or story arc, most likely be able to answer any noob questions that, you know, somebody just getting into the collecting may have, stuff like that. And in the game realm, it doesn't seem like that's as much of a positive occurrence.
Yeah, I would say that perhaps one explanation for that is that gaming, modern gaming, meaning the more accessible and growing games industry of the type that Brian Dalrymple described last time we had him on our show, is relatively young. This new, there's an explosion of very accessible games that aren't necessarily as deep or complicated as a sit-down role-playing game, but nevertheless require a little introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it might be unreasonable to expect one employee to know the intricacies of every role-playing system out there. But to expect an employee to be able to at least have a broad strokes understanding of, you know, 40 to 50% of the games on your shelf, that seems like a reasonable expectation.
It's also potentially crazy expensive to get into.
Because you have to open merchandise for demoing purposes, or?
Or the person who you're going to be hiring has to have a huge library.
Yeah, so of course we would be training we would have our own boot camp where we would train these people using the Nerdstravaganza's vast library of gaming resources. But for an actual retailer, it would mean either finding a person that's already well versed in a slew of games, or allowing them access to the store stock to familiarize themselves with various games. You know,
just thinking of tabletop games, I can't think of anyone who could afford to be an expert in more than two or three of those.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder, speaking of press gangers like Rick mentioned, I don't think the game companies send out demo units for your store or anything, do they? I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to expect a store to have an in-store army to demo with that they haven't paid for, is it?
I think some stores cut you a pretty good deal on some of them, but it's not free.
If it was something that was becoming an industry standard type of thing, you know that the companies, I mean, the more educated the consumer is, the more product they're eventually going to sell. So, I mean, if I owned a store, I would want to make sure that at any cost, I was going to have demo units available. Simply, I mean, how many times have we been to shops that have armies under glass that are all fully painted?
Plenty, actually, yeah.
And that's just sitting there on display. Try to generate some money with that. Have a game board set up with them sitting on a board. That's at least a step in the right direction.
Yeah, even if you advertise, like, on the glass case next to this well-painted army, hey, come by for Thursday night's demos where we'll teach you how to play this game. Or, as an alternative, or maybe even a compliment, coordinate with the people who game at your store to have a tutorial night. Hey guys, we know you like to game in here. Would you be open to, you know, having an outreach night where new players can come in and you can walk them through how to play?
And although we can't pay you, we can give you a pretty good discount on the next purchase for your, you know, whatever you want for your army.
Exactly.
I will say one thing, though, as someone who has worked gaming retail, you'd be surprised how many people would just say, like, no, fuck that.
Like, they just don't want to teach people?
The excuse I got was, dude, it's my night off. I'm here to enjoy, not to teach anybody else anything. I just want to play. Like, I really hate how closed to new people some gamers are. That's always bothered me.
Well, that's kind of the whole reason why we came up with this idea. Because
yes.
Anytime we've been to a demo, it's either completely sucked or the people there make you feel like, well, who the hell are you stepping into our boundaries? It's almost like a lot of these places just come up with these events and do these demos just to get a free copy of the game and share it with their normal crowd, and outsiders are not welcome. And I just think it's so fucked up that such a closed-off group also segregates themselves from their own kind. It's just bizarre to me. And I feel that way at most places that I go to, and I really don't like it.
I can see the argument of somebody who's like, look, this is my game night.
Definitely.
I'm here to play. I'm here to play, not, you know, work. But I think it's probably only a minority. I don't want to say it's a minority because I can't really quantify this, but it seems like it's as much driven by an antisocial bent in some cases as it is, you know, a desire to just be able to unwind on their night off. So your facilitator, your pro, would either have to be the individual who is performing the demos or would have to build bridges with certain gamers who would be receptive to giving up their time in exchange for maybe a store discount or what have you, you know, or maybe a free item or what have, you know, whatever would be enough of an incentive. And Brian, you know, thinking back to visiting you when you were working in a setting like that, yeah, there were a lot of people that were definitely standoffish and not all that interested in teaching you. But for every five of those guys, there was one that was definitely more than willing, even with, I mean, I remember one guy that we all know, Big T, let's call him as a code word. he had no problem like busting out his spare army and letting you play and teaching you the rules. He enjoyed it, actually. So those people are out there.
But yeah. He was actually driven away, too. Right pronto, if I recall.
By the management or by the crowd?
Well, the environment.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's plenty of times we've showed up on a War Machine night or whatever and didn't have our stuff ready or with us. And guys were like, hey, why don't you come on? We'll do a quick game. I'll show you how to play real quick. But then again, it's also different to offer, you know, an olive branch or an extending helping hand than it being a quote-unquote job, as far as somebody who isn't being paid by the store. You know what I mean? It's fun, like, oh, well, it's a slow night, not a bunch of people showed up. Yeah, there's this newbie here. Maybe we can get him to start coming. That's a different mindset than, well, fuck, now I have to go on Thursday night and show them how to play.
Right. That's why I think somebody on staff, a paid employee right. whose job it is to be there, would be more motivated. And whether they accomplish it through engaging the other players or just doing it themselves, you'd have a much better experience for new players looking to learn new things. And apart from just sort of the introduction and demo function, it would also be very handy. And I have seen a lot of stores do this, the sort of referee/organizer role. I've seen that mainly successfully implemented when it comes to card games where there's definite money on the table, right?
Right.
You know, Friday Night Magic is a great example. Most stores are pretty on the ball with that because, I mean, I think if I understand the way it works correctly, you can count on a pretty decent payday out of those every week.
That's also the distributors doing, because Wizards has a really intricate system to develop those people. They're similar to press gangers, basically.
So I've seen like staff at some stores evidently running the events. Are they basically deputized by Wizards to run these? I see. And what is the incentive for them to participate?
Prestige, I guess. I mean, it's passion. They like it, so they support it.
So that's direct manufacturer support of a kind that you probably can't count on from the smaller, more niche, more specialty manufacturers.
So, I don't know how expensive the program is because they are basically volunteer, but you might be able to do that on a small scale.
Yeah, interesting. I'm just trying to think of, well, let's leave it at having support from the manufacturer, from the creator of the game definitely helps. But absent that, a motivated staff or number of staff members can probably fill in the gaps. So we've sort of concentrated on, well, we've just sort of talked gaming generally. We've sort of touched on tabletop, touched on RPGs, role-playing. Those are kind of deep. But I'd like to delve a little more into those. With a role-playing game, how would you engage people? Because you have to assume there's a limited number of seats. And even if you were going to do a mini campaign as to sort of introduce the rules or even run through a module, that's going to be something that occupies a few play sessions. And that person's going to be tied up for those play sessions.
Well, that's something we kind of talked about before. I can't remember if it was on air or off air, but we talked about, and this is something where it's not really going to cost anything other than the person's salary, you know, because we were talking about the tabletop games. There's the investment of the games and stuff like that. But if stores offered a hire a GM service or a DM service to run your RPG-style games, I think that's something that would be a giant asset. Because the hardest thing, me as a brand-new player who doesn't know how to play, nervous about playing with people that I'm not close friends with, the hardest thing has been getting somebody to GM. Everybody wants to play the game, but nobody wants to run the game.
So you would extend the concept of the Dragon's Lair professional gaming room that Brian has implemented at the Adventure Game Store one of our local haunts, by adding an actual, you don't just get the space, you don't just get the dungeon, you get the dungeon master. You don't just get, you get the game master to help run the game for you.
Don't you guys think that would be awesome?
Yeah, that would make me more apt. Knowing that I could go in and expect an organized play session where we just picked up where we let off, I would almost subscribe to that room.
I think that's what you'd be doing too. I think you'd, you know, set up every Wednesday or something like that. You get the room and you get the guy.
Yeah, and a 6-pack of Dr. Pepper to keep Rick happy.
Nice.
So that's another concept, and that helps offset the cost of it being, you know, somebody who's on salary or a staff member. These fees would help pay the way for those people. And you could, now I know we've tread this ground before, because this analogy that I'm drawing is going to ring bells, I hope. It would be kind of like what gyms do with the personal trainers. They're there.
Right.
They're
right.
Available, and you pay to engage their services.
And here's the thing, man. It doesn't even have to be somebody that's on staff. I mean, it could just be somebody who is, do we want to say, sponsored by, or kind of like they're recommended by the gaming place. Like, hey, this is a guy we
endorsed.
You know, endorsed. Thank you. Somebody who's endorsed by the store itself, you know, so that guy gets a discount on his books and stuff like that. He basically is like a hired gun to help people learn shit so the store can sell more merchandise. I mean, it doesn't even have to be somebody on staff, but somebody who's endorsed by them. And, okay, this guy passes our RPG credentials, and we think he's a great DM. So here he is for X amount of dollars an hour or campaign. I mean, that's a whole nother subject of how they could or would get paid. But, I mean, that's like, you could totally have, like, a side business. GanzaGMs.com. Here we come.
That's right. Employ our Ganza Pro certified game masters and change your gaming experience for the better.
That would be a great thing for a manufacturer to do. Here's our world. We train your GMs. You subscribe to our, you know, tournament schedule or whatever, and you affect what happens next in the world.
Ooh, now this I know we've talked about at length, either on air or off or both. A shared, changeable cross campaign or inter campaign setting and narrative. That's cool. I like where you're going, Brian. You as the player get to steer where things go.
Again, Privateer Press kind of does this. They have the results of the, what is it, the land capturing from the tournaments?
Yeah.
Posted in their canon, basically.
They're
kind of halfway there.
That's a good way to engage your community, for sure.
It seems to work, too.
But you know what would be cool is to have stuff where you've got independent campaigns that are tied together by different nights. Like, whatever happens on Tuesday night affects Wednesday's campaign, and whatever happens Wednesday, but it's all still the group that plays on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It's still that group's unique and individual campaign, yet it's interwoven and affected by that GM's other campaigns that he's done that are within the same world or realm.
Now, I really like that.
Several campaigns, one world. I like it.
Right, right. Several campaigns, one world. Exactly.
So that the GM, you know, you sit down and the GM's got a couple-hour play session pretty well laid out for you so that by the end, a conclusion will be reached. And then that affects the world. But your decisions affect the world for the other groups. I really like that.
How is that not worth $5 a person for a five or six-person team or group? You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
it's worth a party, Rick.
It's worth it to
I'm total noob.
it's worth it to us, but you know, you'd have to make a similar pitch to the people who currently just show up and probably play for free and don't understand what the benefit would be. And I think you know, for a pittance like that per player in the party, I think it would be worth it, and something we should explore setting up and profiting handsomely from. Wait, we're giving away all of our secrets to getting rich.
We can't even get people to GM our own game. Find GMs for other people's games.
Nobody's offered to throw me any loose change here, man. I'd be a lot more motivated if I could get some free hot fries and cheese doodles.
That's a good point. I've done worse for a case of Dr. Pepper.
I don't have to feel bad about myself in the morning. That's an improvement. So the other side of the coin, if you will, that I touched on, and I was a little skeptical going into it, but I've sort of been had a background thread going in my mind as we've been having this discussion, is video games. Right now, in a video game store, you go in, buy your game, you go home. You go in, you trade in your stuff, you get mugshots taken and fingerprints and everything, whatever. It's a transactional thing. Maybe you shoot the crap, you bull crap with the staff a little. Then you go home.
Don't forget you get your $6 check for your brand new game.
Right, you trade in last week's $60 game for $6 and still have to give thumbprints and saliva samples. You're treated like a criminal. That's a whole different show topic. But that's basically it. There's no real sense of a community. Why don't game stores offer to play with people? They've got the perfect social, tether to their customers. Hey, I see that you bought this game, this MMORPG. We've got a clan going. We'd love to have you. Oh, my other three friends are playing too. We'd love to have them as well. That's a good way to engage them with the people at the store, to say nothing of the console games. Oh, hey, you just got Borderlands 3. You want to play online? Here's our gamer tags. It just seems like more engagement along those lines could really do a lot to keep a loyal customer base. Or in the case of games that have private servers, hey, we see that you want to play on a, I don't even know if ping or whatever is still a problem, but if you want to play on a, moderate population, low lag server, well, we happen to have our own setup and here it is. It just seems like there's a lot of ways you could sort of draw in and build a community around your store.
I think that second idea is probably a better idea than the first one, because a lot of times the game store clerk is either your best friend or the biggest douchebag you've ever known. or you just don't care whatsoever. And when you were first going on about it, I was kind of like, yeah, that's pretty cool, because then you kind of have your localized store and it's almost like your local gang is all getting together on the same clan. But a lot of people, how many GameStops are there between my house and Brian's house? Probably like 42,000.
Yeah.
So he would be more local and supportive of one, and I would be more local and supportive to another. So it could be a bit of a disconnect between friends there. Not to say you couldn't play on whichever server you wanted, but that would end up being the same problem there is everywhere. You get certain ones that are just a group of people, a mismatch. It's not that localized clan of Coral Springs or Pembroke Pines or whatever. But the server thing you're talking about, like, hey, if you shop at GameStop, you bought this game here, well, check it out. We have our own little server set up here that's got awesome no lag, and anybody can join as long as you shop here. Almost like a rewards card type of thing.
Exactly. And,
that would be cool.
I think to sort of speak just kind of abstractly about GameStop in particular and maybe even smaller game chains, in general, if you consider that digital delivery is on its way, next generation, probably more than a lot of people realize right now, meaning direct downloads of games.
Meaning faster than people realize.
Right. Building a social experience around the game store such that you want to go there and hang out with your buddies who you buy games from and play games with is a potential advantage that you're just not going to get through a digital download. Building a real world social network with the nexus being the physical game store, I think can do a lot to engage players. Now that's going to mean a whole different mindset. And let's be honest, in the case of a GameStop, it's easy. Brian and I both have worked at predecessors of that company, and it's easy to get kind of an exhausted attitude when you work there, because for every person of the type we would be wanting to attract into such a social network, there's the other 90% of like casual gamers or moms or morons that come walking in who you just don't want to like be on the same planet with.
Right.
So we're talking a segment, a slice of the customer base who you could possibly retain and whose experience you could enhance. What do you think, Brian? You've been mulling this over, I sense.
I'm trying to envision. Have you guys ever been to Play-In Trades?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it might work on a Play-In Trade level. GameStop's just too big. You're right. There's probably 3-4 dozen between each of our houses. I may not want to game with all of those people, but a good local, like a friendly local gaming store that happens to be video games instead of board games, they do really well there. Like a Play-In Trade or a, I don't know, there's no other, that's it. Those are your only two options. GameStop or Play-In Trade.
Or if you're in Seattle, Pink Gorilla Games. I'm going to say that again. Pink Gorilla Games in Seattle. Check it out.
It might do well at a place like that.
Yeah, because it seems like something that a place like GameStop, eventually they would see the monetary value in it, and it would be like, it would start off like just inviting everybody, and then it would be like their rewards card. Hey, you know, for $14.99 a month, you get the free magazine, you get a discount on used games, and you get access to our server.
You get the gold weapons to show off that you're special.
And get killed faster.
Or a possible advantage, yeah, and get targeted because you have the gold weapon and people want to kill you. Exactly. Or they could take advantage of their size. Like, this is another, so my initial thought was, yeah, it works better at a mom and pop or a more close-knit store, but maybe World of Warcraft 2 comes out. Hey, you should join like our county's mega guild, this store's chapter. Well, why would I want to play with you guys? Well, we do happen to have some pretty sweet GameStop exclusive in-game content and perks, so we can basically twink your character. I mean, it's not like they haven't signed deals in the past for exclusive content.
Right.
I don't know why such a thing hasn't happened with like an MMORPG yet.
A large-scale professional guild could offer a lot of perks, could offer a lot of power leveling or tactic building or even material gathering.
Absolutely. And that's even before considering corporate sponsorship from a big gaming consortium, which could ink deals for cool advantages as well, right? I mean, so Rick, have you been part of a gigantic guild?
No, not a big one, just a small one.
Brian, just elaborate briefly for Rick's benefit and that of any listeners who aren't quite familiar. Explain a little bit what you meant when you were discussing those advantages.
Generally speaking, craftsmen, for example, you have to go around gathering your ore, gathering your rare gems, gathering the plans, all that kind of stuff by yourself. If you're a part of a larger guild, oftentimes they'll have a guild blacksmith. So it's much easier for that blacksmith to be super high level with all the best plans because everyone's contributing to that and everyone's benefiting by it.
And now add to that equation, our blacksmiths have access to GameStopian steel, a unique type of metal that only members of our guild can use, which required, you know, half the amount of resources apart from that steel to make armor and stuff, you know, little things like that. I think there's a really good way for any retailer with clout to incentivize.
Even a lower failure rate would be a big deal.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Meaning your crafts skills will be, if you're a member of the, if you have the mantle of GameStop on, you will forge more successfully.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can go to, you can hang out in Ironforge with everyone else, but our guild also hangs out in GameStop Forge, so swing on by if you want. See, I'm getting GameStop's back here because I don't want to seem like we just want like the little mom and pop shops to succeed here. We want fairness on the brick and mortar level, let's say.
I'd much rather deal with GameStop than that shithole we had to deal with that time in Orlando.
Get out of here, games.
Get out of here. Get out of our stinky closet used game shop. Yeah.
I think that place was called Game Go. just get out.
As in go.
Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
Okay. For those who don't know, there's this place in Orlando next to a killer comic book and gaming store called Coliseum of Games. Is that what it is? Or Game Coliseum?
Coliseum of Comics.
And it was a used game store that sold a bunch of old stuff. It looked like a real dirty old beat up flea market, which is or thrift shop, which is normally my favorite kind of place to go to. I had seen it for a good year probably, and it was never open. Didn't matter if I was there on a Tuesday or a Saturday. It was never, ever open. Morning, noon, night, always closed. Well, I happened to be at Disney with Tom, and I was like, yeah, we got to go check out this comic book place. It's badass. So we go over there, and I'm like, yeah, there's this used game store, but it's never open. Fantastically enough, it was open this one and only time I'd ever seen it open. We went in there, basically got shit on, abused, and almost caught a disease. And then I went to bring Kimberly back maybe 2 weeks later, and it was closed. Like, the building was empty. So,
yeah, I'm seldom...
So we're allowed to talk shit about them now.
I'm seldom one to cheer on the demise of a small business.
Right.
But if I come in to patronize your small business, at least act like you appreciate my business, for crying out loud. Also, Pink Gorilla Games in Seattle, Washington. Check it out. I'm not paid. I just like the place. So I think we've come up with a pretty, well, some kind of cool pipe dreamy ideas for how video game stores can facilitate sort of a more social aspect. And to get back to our original point, which is a person who would get paid, you could definitely have a community coordinator who works at the store or works for the chain or what have you, whose job it is to make sure everybody gets their perks and gets into guilds and gets on the private servers and gets all the exclusive DLC and what have you.
I mean, in less than an hour, look how many different ideas we came up with just off the top of our heads. I mean, if somebody was being in marketing, was getting paid to think of this shit, I'm sure they could come up with stuff that's far better than what we came up with. And what we came up with would be satisfactory.
Absolutely. We do have the advantage of being very brilliant and creative. But I'm told that the marketing departments will occasionally hire someone who's not quite a slouch and whose ideas are actually remotely possible as well.
True.
Well, I think we've kind of... I don't want to use pipe dreamer again. What's a good analogy? We've kind of thrown darts at the rainbow dartboard of imagination and hit the mark with every throw during this episode. And I think that there can exist a world in which people get paid to not just play games, but in doing so, enhance the gaming experience of others. And on that very positive and uplifting note, I'll encourage our listeners to enhance our podcasting experience by utilizing iTunes to subscribe to our podcast, by utilizing iTunes to rate us 5 rainbow stars, and by utilizing iTunes to write us a very positive, glowing, rainbow farty review.
And if you don't know how to use the internet, you can hire somebody to teach you how to go over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, and they can show you how to download the show, stream the show, rate the show, comment on the show, send us an email, all kinds of cool stuff.
And you can give us a like on Facebook, and if you join the group, we're going to have a play-by-mail thread where you can roleplay with all the Nerdstravaganza fans.
By mail. Get USPS exclusive Nerdstravaganza stamps if you join today. Just
Tommy?
Kidding, there's no such
Tommy, take us out.
Oh, no. You didn't mean, like, take out old Yeller. There's nothing else to say here but farewell.
Poor old Yeller.
Why did old Yeller die? Did he have rabies or something?
Yeah, rabid.
Don't they have a... Can't they cure... Is rabies, like, incurable? Like, once you get it, you're like a... Is it, like, basically...
That dog with a homosexual, I saw him licking another dog's sack.
Like, it's like becoming an infected. Like, is this where the whole zombie plague thing comes from? It's, like, from rabies?
Could be.
I have no idea.
Wow, how the hell do we get on this topic from from gaming?